Greetings, golf fans, and welcome to episode 91 of Playing the Tips podcast. This is the Sanderson Farms Championship preview and one more week on the beautiful grind. From Fort Pontchartrain, Deux des Trois, I am your host, Sports Guy Ty. You can find me on Twitter at Sports Guy Ty. And joining me as ever from Ann Arbor, Michigan, Shallow Cal. Good to be back after a few weeks off, my friend.
How about those Detroit Lions, baby?
Got it rolling a little bit right now, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Football season has started, and but it's nice to get the fall swing underway, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, we're probably a little bit in the majority on that one, but I'm right there with you. I'm excited for fall golf. I love football season. I love college football. I love pro football. I'm a big Ole Miss guy. Spent a bunch of time in Mississippi, which we'll talk about a little later. But I love the fall golf swing, and I actually am pretty intrigued by what we're going to see this year with sort of a qualification series, if you will. A lot of guys playing for a lot out here, playing for cards, playing for placement in some of those elevated events. So I'm interested to see how it plays out. I know we've already had, you know, one kind of top opener a couple weeks ago at the Fortinet, had the brief pause with Ryder Cup. So kind of good to be back in a more normal flow for these next couple weeks on a PGA Tour.
Yep.
So last podcast we recorded was actually all the way back for the St. Jude Championship, which took place just up I-55 in Memphis from where we are this week, just north of Jackson, Mississippi. Big hit last year for both of us at this tournament. Garrick Higo, 500-1 on the each way, finished solo third. We're going to talk more about Garrick Higo as we get into this, but some pretty good memories, some good vibes from the SIP, Shallow Cal.
Yeah, I remember coming down to Oxford and visiting you there at Ole Miss. Quite a great place to be, Mississippi. I know Jackson's a little bit south of Oxford.
Yeah, about 2.5 hours south down 55.
That Garrick Higo, man, even with a 500-1 each way hit on that one with the 1/5 payout on that, it was still brutal. I feel like we should have won that 500-1 bet, man. He was right there and just faltered a little bit down the stretch, and he would have been solo first, I believe.
Yeah, he had some opportunities. He missed a couple short putts last year. I want to say like 16, 17, one if not both of those holes. Missed a 5-6 footer. Almost kind of, you know, gave us a little scare falling out of the places there with some of those putting woes down the stretch, but was able to hold on for that solo third, really almost out of nowhere, as evidenced by the 500-1 number that was hung on him to start the tournament.
Yeah.
But good stuff. You want to give me your elevator speech synopsis of the Ryder Cup since we are kind of fresh off of that event and all of its storylines?
That's about what I thought was going to happen, honestly. I wasn't sure if it was going to be, I didn't think it was going to be that wide of a margin. And I think where it really the determining factor of it, that being a wide of a margin, was the first day when Europe just came out. And I think they really wanted to set the tone, and they did. And they swept all four matches. You know, I didn't really expect to wake up to 4-0 sweep going into the second part of the day. That set the tone, and ultimately, what was the end result? I believe it was 4 points. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you are correct.
So, you know, the drama with Rory and Joe LaCava, and you know, Brooks calling out Rahm. Yeah, it was a good Ryder Cup. I enjoyed watching it. I was really shocked that the U.S. was actually in a position that late in the day on Sunday to potentially tie and thus retain the cup.
Yeah, I was.
But then they blew it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it was nice to at least have something to kind of wake up to on Sunday and at least watch some golf because, as you mentioned, with that 4-0 start Friday morning, it kind of went south in a hurry for the U.S. and was glad they were able to rally a little bit Sunday afternoon, excuse me, Saturday afternoon, pick up a few points, at least make it somewhat interesting. It was a great week for me betting wise at the Ryder Cup. Hard for me to really victory lap that one because I did not actually formally tip any bets, any players, any odds for the Ryder Cup for no other reason than I just got busy and completely forgot to post my card on Twitter.
Yeah.
But did hit Rory McIlroy as a top overall scorer, hit Mr. Max Homa as the top American. Barely missed on Europe, winning by 1 to 3 points. Kind of frustrating. Just needed one of those matches to flip the other way on Sunday, and it would have been a really, really big week for me. But again, hard to victory lap that one. Can't count it in the overall stats since I didn't post the card, but I did come out of Ryder Cup feeling pretty good despite the performance of the Americans.
I really thought that my 15 and a half to 12 and a half, I believe it was, that I had, was gonna hit.
Man, it sure looked like it. It really
Yeah.
did down the stretch there.
Yeah, I was I mean, it was teetering and teetering, and then when I believe it was Scheffler and Rahm tied, that put it to a half point, I'm pretty sure.
That
And
sounds right.
I thought, oh my gosh, we've got this. There's like four or five matches left. Each one of them is going a certain way. I think we could, if we don't have any more ties, we really are looking at that 15 and a half number. Europe just won too many of those matches.
Yeah, it's really kind of incredible the dominance that the European side has exhibited on their soil. It's 30 plus years, 32 now, I guess, is where it sits. The last time the Americans won on European soil. So pretty incredible from that standpoint, what they've been able to do there.
Yeah, they definitely know how to pick the course setup. They definitely know how to pick the venue. I think that what Europe provides that America doesn't really provide is that a lot of these guys play these European courses a lot more than the American guys go over and play in the DP events or things like that. Just because, you know, obviously they're Europeans and they're getting over there more. And the Europeans, you know, they come to America for college. You know, how many of the guys on Team Europe played college golf in America on American courses and then, you know, played on the Korn Ferry Tour or went straight to the PGA Tour? I would say probably a majority of Team Europe, if not all of them. So they're used to playing American courses. They play American courses considerably more often than the Americans play European style courses. So I think that's why the Europeans have a lot of an advantage there. But man, do they sure know how to take advantage of it and pick the venues and pick the setup.
Yeah, they really do. And I think that's a key part of it too, picking the venues and then setting up those venues to play for their to play to their strengths. US side has gotten better about that in recent years, and we certainly have a pretty good record on this side of the pond when we're playing those matches. But beyond that, and this is the last thing I'll say on Ryder Cup, and we can move on to talking Sanderson Farms in Mississippi, but a lot of peculiar decisions in my book by Zach Johnson, both leading up to and then during the Ryder Cup. I mean, we won't again get into this because it's been talked about ad nauseum, but some of the selections, maybe. It's easy to Monday morning quarterback it now, but an interesting lineup construction going into the week. And really, a big piece that just kind of puzzled me was the fact that none of those guys went over and played at Wentworth or any of the DP World Tour events leading into the Ryder Cup. I mean, the entire 12-man squad on the European side played Wentworth a couple weeks prior. They all made the cut, so they're playing good golf. They're playing competitive golf. They're playing together in a lot of those cases on the weekend. And not a single American did it. Now, I get, we went over there, we did some scouting, played some Marco Simone, had a little boondoggle, and it just struck me as odd that Zach Johnson took that approach. And then finally, you know, some of those pairings first off on Friday morning, I was very surprised we didn't see Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka as the lead match to go out on the U.S. side.
I think putting Scheffler and Burns together just because they are buddies was kind of stupid.
And you really could have said the same thing about JT and Jordan Spieth, but not for the player we would have predicted going into it. I mean, Spieth should have been benched flat out. I mean, that guy, he had a two-way miss going with his driver, by all accounts, you know, was battling it in the weeks leading up, couldn't ball strike to save his life. And I know he did have the good effort on Sunday in the singles matches, but I mean, just putting JT and Spieth together because they're JT and Spieth backfired again, not because of Justin Thomas, but because of Jordan Spieth.
Yeah. And honestly, well, they should have won that afternoon match on Friday. Vic Hovland kind of snatched that one from them with that. I mean, what was that, a 25-footer there to have the match on 18?
Yep. I mean, that was impressive. But again, that's all kind of in spite of the way Spieth was playing.
Yeah, because, I mean, Spieth was out of the hole because he was in the water and whatever. And JT was 2.5 feet for birdie. And if Hovland doesn't make that 25-foot putt, you know, then there's another point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, who knows? Whatever. Oh, well.
All right. Well, by way of a little agenda for the rest of tonight's show, we are going to do a tournament preview and course overview for the Sanderson Farms Championship. Go through some stats to consider, look at any weather of note, and then, of course, we will get into tips, picks, and best bets. Shallow Cal, before we do all that, what do we need from the people?
What do we need from the people? Hit that like button and give us a follow on Twitter at PlayingTipsPod. Hit the subscribe button for the Playing the Tips podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify. Is Stitcher still a thing?
I don't think Stitcher is still a thing. We probably need to pull them out.
All right, no more Stitcher. Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Don't forget to download the episode. Leave us a review. Thanks again to all that tune in every week. We will be starting to come back regularly into the rotation, so can't wait to get back at it.
Yeah, definitely glad to be back, and you can tell that we're a little bit rusty. We've been off for a couple of weeks here because I didn't even ask you what your podcast sauce is for this week.
I'll give you one guess.
I'm going to go with Bell's Two Hearted.
The unofficial official beer of Michigan, Bell's Two Hearted Ale.
You got one guess on mine?
Labatt Blue Light.
We're pretty predictable these days, aren't we?
Yep, we sure are.
All right, well, I digress. We'll steer it back here to where we need to be. Jump in with a little tournament preview. Again, Sanderson Farms Championship. PGA Tour returns to the Magnolia State this week, my former stomping grounds and a place I dearly love in Mississippi. Spent 12 years of my life down there. Been away for 7 years now, which seems like a lifetime. But I'll tell you what, got some great vibes about the state of Mississippi going into this week after my Ole Miss Rebels knocked off LSU last week in Oxford. So King Lane and the Mighty Rebels, they coming, Shallow Cal, for a little more drip in the sip this week.
Man, I just can't believe we didn't win that bet versus Alabama.
I'm still pissed about that. This is not a good Alabama football team, and if you're not getting them this year, I don't know when you're going to get Nick Saban.
And the problem was they should have Mississippi should have had damn near 17 more points in the first half and just couldn't do it.
Yeah, absolutely devastating. Missed chip chop field goal at the end of that first half.
Yeah.
All right, so we are at the Country Club of Jackson, which has played host to this event since 2014 when it moved from Annandale just up the road into Madison County. Course opened in 1914. Important information is the redesign by John Foat in 2008. He is a Donald Ross disciple, and you'll notice many similarities to traditional Donald Ross courses here, particularly around the greens. Parkland-style routing, it is a bit tight with narrow fairways, not as many trees as a typical Ross course, but we will still kind of classify this as a tree-lined Parklands. Shallow Cal, you want to talk to us a little bit about par yardage?
Yeah, par 72, 74, 50-ish yards. We're back with a pretty typical setup. Four par fives, four par threes, and, 10 par fours. Boy, math is hard these days. It's, like you said, it's a pretty straightforward course. It's tree-lined parklands, but it's not super tree-lined. No real crazy elevation changes or anything like that. The greens are fairly large to what we've been seeing kind of previously during the last half of last season. 6,200 square foot average. Champion Bermuda grass this week, so watch out for your Bermuda specialists. It's a if you putt well on this surface, you can have an incredibly hot week rolling in some of these putts on this green, on these greens. The complexes aren't too crazy or undulating, so you'll see some of these guys rolling in some long putts here. And they are quick, but nothing that's going to be like Masters bent grass quick.
Very manageable, I would say.
Yes.
A lot of these Southern boys are going to be very excited to get back on some Champion Bermuda grass, particularly any of those who played out on the West Coast to begin the fall swing at the Fortinet with that POA. Average of about 6,500 square feet or so, but you do actually get a little bit of variety from green to green. Some as small as 5,000 square feet and up to 8,500. This is also a course that hides terrible putters, as you alluded to. You can really kind of catch a vibe on these Champion Bermuda grass greens, and if you get rolling, it can really negate that weakness for a lot of players. Sergio Garcia won in 2021 literally with his eyes closed. I think this was the first tournament when he started putting with his eyes closed, and it kind of got caught by the cameras for the first time. Cameron Champ is a past winner in 2018, historically one of the worst putters on tour. So certainly, like guys who have familiarity with some of that Bermuda grass being back in the deep South, but not overly concerned about poor putters this week. What else are we looking at by way of agronomy? What do you got for rough and fairways out there?
We've got a little bit of Zoysia in the rough.
Zoysia sprinkled in.
It's not super penal this week. Bermuda grass, it's, I've seen anywhere from like 2 to 2.5 inches. It's really not going to be a challenge compared to what we see most of the time on tour. Like you said, comp course. Oh, we haven't even talked about comp course yet, have we?
We hadn't gotten there yet.
Well, we're going to talk about Rocket Mortgage and Detroit Golf Club, but I would say that the Detroit Golf Club had much taller and much more penal rough than we're going to see out here. If you're in the rough, it's not going to be the worst. Fairways, Bermuda grass, course defenses, water in play on five holes. I think there's like 50 something bunkers. So it's not anything super crazy out here. Really straightforward scoring birdie fest. Whoever putts the best is going to win on this course.
Yeah, I think definitely some truth to that, as history has shown here at Country Club of Jackson. Not much by way of course defenses. That rough, not overly penal, as you mentioned. It's a pretty flat course, just again where we are in the southeastern United States, the Deep South and Mississippi. You don't have a whole lot of undulation, not much slope on those fairways. A lot of different ways you can attack the course. We'll get into that a little bit with stats to consider, but it is a course that lends itself, again, to kind of a plethora of different ways to attack it, bomb and gouge to plotting and kind of everything in between there.
Yeah.
not necessarily a birdie fest. I know that this is by no means classified a difficult course on tour, but only twice in 10 years at Country Club of Jackson has the winning score exceeded 20 under par, much closer to that average, right around 17, 18 under par, including Mackenzie Hughes last year at 17 under. So certainly need to score a little bit, but not a true resort style birdie fest. All right, Shadow. Okay, now we'll talk some comp courses. So give me a little bit more on Rocket Mortgage Classic or any others that you like alongside CCJ.
This one and Sedgefield.
Yeah, Sedgefield's a big one for me.
Detroit is a Donald Ross course.
It is indeed.
It is? Okay. I wasn't 100% sure on that. And then Sedgefield is a Donald Ross course. Obviously Donald Ross is got his fingerprints all over this with the John Fote connections. So that's kind of what I'm looking for with that.
Yeah, a lot of overlap on leaderboards at the Wyndham Championship held at Sedgefield and also Sanderson Farms here. Sergio Garcia is a winner at both. You got those Bermuda Green complexes that are pretty similar, again, with Fote being kind of a disciple of Donald Ross and that golden era of course design. I like Detroit Golf Club as well. It's probably a bit tighter, a bit more heavily tree lined than we are down here. As you mentioned, that rough, little more gnarly, little juicier, probably at Rocket Mortgage Classic than what we've seen here. But again, both Donald Ross courses, so pretty good guide there. What are you looking at in terms of stats to consider this week, Shallow Cow?
It's really a little bit of a roll the dice week because of the putting here and the putting contest that it is. But I really looked at guys who are good off the tee, guys who are able to catch a hot putter, guys who are pounding greens and giving themselves a chance to catch that hot putter. I think that's going to be an important stat here, because if you are, even if, you know, you're 15, 20 feet, but you're still consistently giving yourself those chances to roll in a few extra birdies, I think that's going to be really key here. And then I'm looking at your ability to make birdies. You got to be able to score here, and bogey avoidance as well with this birdie fest. If you can avoid some of the mistakes and put up those real, real low numbers, I like your chances.
Yeah, pretty similar in my approach this week. I'll start with strokes gained off the tee. As I mentioned, there's two very clear approaches to winning here in my eyes. You can either bomb and gouge because, again, rough, not overly penal. You don't have a whole lot of hazards to contend with, so being wayward off the tee isn't the worst thing as long as you're far down there. But there's definitely a blueprint for being a course plotter as well. You can lay up to these par fives, be great with your wedges, and really give yourself a lot of chances to score on the right holes. That being said, I do lean more toward distance this week if I'm wanting to pick one of the two approaches. But certainly we've seen guys like a Peter Malnati and Nick Taylor, your much shorter hitters, really have a lot of success here. Last six winners in Jackson, four have been in the top 10 in strokes gained off the tee. Three were top five. Sergio Garcia led the field 2 years ago. Mack Hughes was a bit of an outlier last year. He actually lost over a half stroke off the tee. The only place of the major strokes gain stats that he lost strokes in route to victory last year, but made up for it by just having a superb tee to green game. Great ball striking, really good on approach, was able to putt a little bit. So again, just lends more credence to that theory that couple different ways to skin a cat here when we're talking about CCJ.
Yeah.
I do like that overall tee to green game as well. Again, pretty straightforward course, kind of some of those old-timey traits of a Donald Ross. Got to be very solid throughout the bag. And then you alluded to it as well. We've talked about it already, but putting, Bermuda putting, this event does tend to hide those bad putters, but pretty straightforward green complexes. You know, they're fast-ish, running 12 on the stint meter. But again, guys with that familiarity on Bermuda, some of those deep southern guys going to be very much at home on this course, and I think catching a hot putter could be very key to it.
Yeah.
All right, not much by way of weather to worry about this week. Pretty straightforward, pretty seasonal, temperate for the most part in Mississippi. It does start to cool off as we get into the weekend. We start off with Wednesday, Pro-Am day, into the 90s, and then just kind of backs off from there. High to mid-80s Thursday and Friday, and then a little bit of a break in the weekend, only highs in the low 70s. Plenty of sun throughout, not a ton of wind to contend with. If any at all, it'll likely be Saturday afternoon, but no rain to speak of in the forecast. So this should be, again, a pretty straightforward approach to the weather week. Jackson International Airport is one option on Windfinder. We are actually a little bit north of the city, so I may kind of lean away from Windfinder this week, or at least from that specific location with Jackson International Airport, rely on kind of a more traditional weather.com approach, maybe for the Madison area. All right, Shallow KL, we have rolled through it from a preview standpoint, so that means we got one thing left to do. That's make a couple picks. You and I both with some shorter cards this week, only four plays each. I went with three southern gentlemen myself and one very, very far southern gentleman. Just before we get into specifics, kind of your overall approach to building the card this week and how you landed on some of your names.
I think a lot of these guys, one especially, has been really knocking on the door all of last year. They're players who are not going to hopefully lose the tournament, but I mean, boy, one of them definitely could lose the tournament on Wednesday.
I know who that is.
Yeah, you definitely know who that is. Hopefully they will be. Hopefully they'll be strong showers, guys who kind of broke out last year and are looking to start this year really super strong.
I like it. Well, let's make some picks. We're going to start with you. We each have a play, you know, near-ish the top of the boards. You're a little bit shorter than me, but I will let you take it from here. You are win only on Eric Cole, 22-1.
Yeah, let's talk. You know, you want to talk about a guy who really broke out last year. I think Eric Cole was him, right? You had Sahith and a couple other guys get their first victories. Unfortunately, Cole did not, but he's a killer on courses like this. He has a crazy hot putter that he can flash. And one second, if I am looking at this stat correctly, he has the most total birdies, 461, first on tour last season.
That doesn't surprise me just from a pure volume play, because this dude doesn't take weeks off.
Yes. And he is a grinder, so get back to grinding, right? He's not a huge gainer of strokes gained off of the tee, but it's not something that's gonna hinder him, I don't think, because of the other parts of his game on this course and it being a little bit wider, flatter here on this course.
Yeah, you know, I like Eric Cole a lot this week as well. Certainly a consideration for me in our season-long fantasy league. He opened a bit longer than 22-1, and I don't recall exactly what that number was early morning, Monday morning. I want to say I saw him as high as 28-1. I could be off there, but regardless, wherever it started, those numbers did tumble pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was kind of sleeping at the wheel this Monday and didn't place any bets until quite a bit afterwards. They had been released. So 22 is what I got, and that's where I wanted to go at the top of the board there.
Yeah, I like it. Like I said, I considered it myself. I do start my card a bit longer than that, but not much. I am 2 points each way on Cashmere Keith Mitchell, 30-1. The coolest, smoothest looking dude out there in his Cashmere. Don't know that we're going to see a whole lot of Cashmere this week in Mississippi, but I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah.
This dude is living the life. He went to the University of Georgia in Athens for undergrad. He lives on Sea Island. He plays golf for a living. I am sure, certain, in fact, that he has a smoking hot wife. And I just want to be Keith Mitchell, man. This is Captain Cool.
Who's the guy that fishes and golfs on the DP World Tour?
Victor Dubuisson.
So if you could be Keith Mitchell or Victor Dubuisson, who are you taking?
Damn, that is a very, very difficult choice. You know, Victor probably has had the better career to this point. He's played on a Ryder Cup. He got damn close to number one in the world at one point.
Those European chicks are pretty hot, too.
They are. And I tell you what, when all you do is fish and golf, I mean, damn. That's tough.
That's a life right there.
That's a life right there. Cashmere Keith does like tough courses. His only career win on tour came at Honda, but he does make some birdies too. Again, this isn't necessarily classified as what we would call a tough course, but certainly not your outright birdie fest either. So I actually kind of like that combination of him, you know, being more positive on the difficult courses, but making plenty of birdies too. Played the first round of the playoffs at Memphis, but didn't advance to Illinois in the BMW Championship. However, before that, he was fifth at TPC Twin Cities. So I know that feels like ages ago because that was all the way back into July. But last couple times we've seen him in competitive golf, he's been pretty solid, particularly going back to that top five finish at TPC Twin Cities. I am perturbed a little bit, actually more than a little bit, a lot, by three missed cuts and three attempts here. But this really is a course that should fit his game. He is an excellent Bermuda putter. Again, Honda Classic, his lone victory, known for those Bermuda greens down in South Florida. Southern gentleman through and through, grew up in the South, went to college in the South, plays in the South, so should be really familiar with these type of courses. Big driver of the golf ball, too. I really like his ability to take advantage some strokes gained off the tee and put himself in a lot of position. Hadn't seen Cashmere Keith on really anybody's card this week across golf Twitter, and I kind of like that. I start to get nervous when my bets stack up as kind of those chalky plays all week. It just feels like it's very rare when we get those big community wins in golf Twitter. So I kind of like the contrarian play on Cashmere Keith this week. All right, Shallow Cal, what's that?
I dig it.
You going back to the well on a guy that we had a lot of success with.
How can you not go back to the well after cashing a 100-1?
Well, for one, I stared at those 66-1s all morning on Monday, and I did debate it. I surely did. But even that number at 66-1 felt so short after hitting 500-1 each way on him last year.
You want to know why it feels short?
Tell me.
Because he's going to win the tournament this year. Pick up back. 2023-2024 season, this is his year. He's coming back, baby.
A lot of folks must feel the same way because golf Twitter crashed Garrick Higgo's odds from 66-1 all the way down to 40-1, 35-1 even, I believe, in one place right now. I'll have to confirm that. No, I'm sorry. 40s across the board, pretty consistent. But yeah. Why Garrick Higgo at that number?
Let's talk about strokes gain. Wait. Does he even gain strokes off the tee anymore? Does he gain strokes anywhere?
That was one of my concerns.
Yeah. All right. Birdie Fest, Parklands course, Garrick Higgo. Normally good. The last year, my man was a little lost. Okay. He's going to come back here to somewhere he likes and has played well. He definitely had a chance to win. It's a weak field again this year. If there's a get right spot again, for Mr. Higo, I think we've got it in the Country Club of Jackson. Can't take the chips off the table. He's top 10 in the field, strokes gained total here on this course. So let's go with Garrick, 40-1.
Yeah, I can't ever get mad at you for betting Garrick Higo, one of my all-time favorite golfers as well. Couldn't get behind it myself, but I support you in what you're doing.
Excellent. Refund time coming if I lose.
I do have a 40-1 play myself. Another guy whose odds shortened considerably. Actually, my last selection on the card. I put out three of my picks on Monday, or actually, it might have actually been this morning. Yeah, early Tuesday morning on Twitter. I said I was going to save one exclusively for the podcast that we are recording tonight. And so that is Davis Riley. I am on Mr. Riley 1.5 points each way at 40-1. Hattiesburg, Mississippi native, about an hour or so south, not even that, about 45 minutes or so southeast of Jackson. Actually a place where I spent a good 7 months of my career in sports journalism. Played college golf at Bama. He is on the record as saying this is his fifth major. He loves this course. I believe he still lives in Mississippi. He may even still live in Hattiesburg. So certainly an area that's very familiar to him. He's played here a ton of times as an amateur. He's won a couple tournaments as an amateur at this country club, Country Club of Jackson. So certainly plenty of familiarity. I'm certain he snuck up there a few times the last couple weeks to check things out. So he should have a great lay of the land. Plays his best G in the American South. His lone win on tour, albeit a team win, came at the Zurich Classic down in New Orleans. Last season, 7 other top 30s on Southern courses. Again, some of his very best performances of the season, including a T8 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Little bit of form on a comp course as well. He was 13th at the Wyndham Championship in 2022, so I love to see that. Good Bermuda putter as well, nearly a half stroke better than he is on Bent or Poa. Doesn't have tremendous success in this specific tournament as a PGA Tour event, but I gotta believe that a big breakthrough finish is coming. If not a victory this week, I feel really good about him contending for the places in that top 6. So give me some Davis Riley, 40-1. All right, we're going to volley back and forth here. Our card's set up pretty nicely for the flow of the show. We'll let you go next, Shallow Cow, with your 50-1.
Is it Dylan Wu?
It is Dylan Wu, but I kind of like Dylan Wu better. Let's just go with that.
Dylan Wu? All right, Dylan Wu! I think we might have him mixed up. I think Brandon might be 50-1.
Did I get him backwards? You Brandon Wu 50-1, Dylan 60-1?
I think that might be it. I think that's what threw me off here. Let me check.
All right, but that is your fault because you texted me Dylan Wu 50-1 and Brandon Wu 60.
God damn it. well, shit. Anyways.
Dealer's choice. You pick who you want to talk about first.
Let's go Brandon. Brandon Wu. Brandon Wu is 50-1. 3 top 10s last year, 4 top 5s in his career, 2 runner-up finishes, great birdie or better on par 4s. Let's keep the bogey avoidance. Get hot here with a little putter. Guys do. He's been knocking on the door. The same thing with his brother. It's kind of what I'm going for and looking for, these guys who are really fighting and coming on strong in an event like this where it's ripe for the taking. You don't have many big names. Luddy and Eric Cole up at the top are not like anything that you can't, insurmountable. So
I really like Brandon, his game. Really like his brother Dylan, his game. We'll talk about more of that in a little bit here. But yeah, Brandon Wu, 50-1.
You definitely have the Woos covered this week. You got the last name ending in U covered as well. Actually, a little bit surprised that you didn't go with Kevin Yu as well, just to make it a triumvirate. But
I thought about it.
I actually did too, just purely from the standpoint of I like his game for this course.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let me jump in then with my 50-1, and we'll get back to your Woo love fest. 1 point each way on Davis Thompson for me, 50-1. Another Southern boy with plenty of ties to the region. He was born in Auburn, went to high school there. UGA for college, lives on St. Simon's Island, kind of following that Killa Keith Mitchell blueprint. Should be really comfortable here. Again, having played extensively on many similar tree-lined Parklands-type courses with Bermuda greens. Very typical of what you're going to find in the American South. He's made the cut in both starts here. Finished last season on a high note as well. Missed the playoffs, but was T22 at Comp Course Sedgefield for the Wyndham Championship in his last event of the year. Do like the fact that he kept a little bit of that momentum as well coming into the fall. Kind of picked up right where he left off. Had a decent top 30 finish at the Fortinet to open the fall swing. So certainly a little bit of form here last couple weeks. Pretty good from a strokes gained perspective in this field. Over the last 24 rounds, he is first in strokes gained par 5. Again, critical to stacking some of those low numbers this week. 12th in birdie or better, 17th in greens and regulation, and 19th in putting. Give me a little bit of that Davis Thompson 50-1.
All right.
All right, back to you for Dylan Wu, this time at 60-1.
Who are the top 5 golfers of all time?
For me personally, Tiger, Arnie, Jack.
No. Top 5 golfers of all time. Dylan, and Dylan. It's hot fire. Okay?
Okay.
Couple top 10s last year, including a top 5. He's an absolute, this is one of the things I talked about in our stats to consider. He's an absolute green and regulation machine. And that's going to lead to a lot of success here. Birdie Fest. He makes a lot of birdies and is very good in bogey avoidance. I like that. I like that he is an up and coming player. Again, that narrative, I'm going to ride it this week. An event where it is very winnable. Dylan. Woo!
60-1.
All right, let's go.
All right, well, just to finish my thought there, Tiger, Arnie, Jack, I'll go Bobby Jones, and I will finish with Annika Sorenstam as my top 5 golfers of all time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess I will close us out then. Your card's finished. I got one play left. I don't have a whole lot to say about him because, to be perfectly honest, there hasn't been a whole lot of good things to say about this golfer in recent weeks or months here. But much like your Garrick Higo infatuation, I just have a hard time turning away from my guy, Christian Bezuidenhout. As mentioned, 3 Southern gentlemen with my first 3 picks, Cashmere Keith, Davis Riley, Davis Thompson, a way, way Southern gentleman with this next pick from South Africa. I am on Bezuidenhout, 80-1, as mentioned. Felt that was a pretty fair number in this field. You know, certainly would expect that if there was a little bit more top-end talent, you push him out into the triple digits. But again, given the makeup of this field in the fall, I think 80-1 is a pretty decent value on Bez. Should be a good fit for him. He does like those tight tree-lined parklands. He's certainly more comfortable away from a true birdie fest. He doesn't really contend well at those 22, 25 under par type events. As mentioned, there's certainly an avenue for shorter hitters here. Peter Molnati, Nick Taylor, a couple guys I mentioned earlier have had a ton of success around this course. Pretty accurate with the driver. Should be good at finding himself some opportunities on these greens. And he's a damn good putter. Not as much this past season. Kind of wavered on him a little bit and had been one of the strengths of his game. But, you know, again, a course that hides bad putters. Maybe can kind of cover up some of those recent struggles that he's had. Did make the cut in his only appearance here. I believe he was T39, if I'm not mistaken, last year. Yeah, T39. So a little bit of good vibes on the course. I'm going to go with Christian Bezuidenhout more than anything because I don't want to miss the big performance. I do truly believe he is far too talented of a golfer to have not won on the PGA Tour to this point. I do expect that at some point in this season we're going to see a victory from Bezuidenhout on tour, and I think the fall swing would be a great time to get it. All right, before we end, let's just wrap up with something we kind of started toward the end of last season at the end of each podcast. Any FOMO players for you, Shallow Cal? Any guys that you are just worried that you're going to miss out on a win, but you just couldn't fit them on your card this week?
I'm a little bit worried with the way that Ludwig's been playing, that he's just going to fucking boat race everybody here.
Normally, I would be behind that, but a lot of partying in Rome following that Ryder Cup victory. That's a long flight over. Not to mention the fact that he, for the first time in his career, will be playing as the favorite in the field. That seems a stack against him, in my opinion. But I agree, just boatloads of talent for that dude.
Or he just doesn't give a fuck and is out there free swinging and just puts up, you know, posts 25 under and nobody catches him.
Yeah, or he's just a machine and none of that matters and he's just destroying the field.
Do you remember when you were 23 years old?
I try to forget those years.
When you had a long night of drinking, how was it the next day?
Well, it certainly freed up my golf swing a little bit, I'll say that.
It's not nearly as bad as, you know, 37. So I think this 23-year-old, just fresh out of college kid, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. I think that's a very fair take. I've got some FOMO at the top of the board. I mentioned that I do like your Eric Cole pick. I actually really like Steven Yeager this week. Couldn't get behind those numbers. It just feels like that sets up for a disaster of a 3-point win only, and he bottoms out at like T51 or something. But I do love how his game fits for this course. He was all over the top of my model as I was doing some projections coming into tonight. Like Emiliano Grillo a lot, of course, you know, played very well toward the end of last season, has had some success here. What's that?
The Mighty Duck Man.
The Mighty Duck Man. Emiliano! Alex Smalley was probably the one that was closest to making my card of all those who didn't. But again, just too much volatility there. I actually think the 40s that are still hanging around on him are pretty fair numbers. Would have liked to see like 50, 60 to one even, and I probably would have jumped on it. But he's another guy where, you know, I can see a solo third place finish or a missed cut and not a whole lot in between.
If I told you that a player that is at the top of your model was 40 to one as a first round leader, would that be something that you might be interested in?
That would be something I might be interested in.
Jägerbombs. Let's do it ad live right now. I'm going to throw a 40 to 1. I'm gonna do it each way, too, to six places for one-fifth at 40 to 1. Ooh. Yeah, why not throw $20 on that right there. Okay, Steven, Jägerbombs, first-round leader. Let's go.
I might have to join you on that one. That sounds pretty intriguing, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, because he's always good for one.
Always good for one. Anybody else? Anybody else on your FOMO list?
No. I like where I'm at. I mean, obviously, this event's a weird one, so anything can happen here, and I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I'll just throw one more out there. I almost went with the entire Southern United States lineup, almost threw Mississippi native Hayden Buckley in there as well. On our preferred book, Bet Rivers, 40, just a little bit too short. Had that 55-1 bid at Bet Rivers that's hanging out there at Bet MGM. I probably would have considered it a little bit stronger to get that each way play, but I'm okay with passing on Mr. Hayden Buckley this week. All right, a reminder, you can see all of our picks for the Sanderson Farms Championship by following at Playing Tips Pod on Twitter. Shallow Cal, great to be back doing this with you again this week, my friend. Let's go well and find out the winner.
Sounds great. Gagabombs.
Gagabombs.